Marnie, I'm really glad this week that we've taken the time to reflect upon the game and not be too overly emotional like maybe the last one against GWS was.
Speak for yourself. I was fine, mate.
I was in my feelings.
You were in your feels. Last week we recorded like an hour after the show and Josh went a little bit rogue. I apologise on his behalf because that's usually my job to be the rogue one of the two. So we've taken a night to sleep on the result against Fremantle and we're here today, Sunday, feeling fresh and ready to tackle the game.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. I've got my thoughts together and we're going to get into it. But a couple of things to say right off the top. Thank you to everyone for coming and saying hello to myself and Marnie and the Close to a Flag guys around Bay 29. Really made me feel like a rock star, which I'm
you
definitely
are a rock
not.
Star, no, doll. No, come on.
No, Marnie, stop that. You're embarrassing in front of everybody. No, it was really nice to see everyone come and say hello and meet a few people. And it was really, really cool. Every single game that we do Bay 29, basically, I think we're going to hang outside Bay 29 in the public area just outside the aisle.
I think so, at halftime in particular.
Yeah, halftime, if we do Bay 29, if you're not in Bay 29, come down and say hello to all of us. We'll hang outside in the little beer area on the little beer tables and we can meet you guys, say hello, and we can just talk about our anxieties together because I definitely did that with a few people. One guy I met yesterday brought his missus who speaks French. She's from another little island that I have forgotten. I know you guys are listening. I apologize. I've just forgotten where she was from. A little island somewhere near New Zealand. But, you know, that was her first AFL experience. And
Poor thing, coming to a North game. Gee whiz.
What a ride it would have been. But that were lovely. So, yeah, thank you to everyone who came up. But, yeah, every Bay 29, if you're not in Bay 29, at halftime, come down to the Bay and we'll meet you guys outside the Bay and say hello.
You can talk about your anxieties with Josh and your positive Delulu chat with me.
Speaking of Delulu chat, Marnie was outside the ground talking to people with the besties.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, the Footy Besties has finally arrived at North Melbourne. I will be floating around the front of the ground pre-game for probably the rest of the season, me and my mini mic. So if you do see me, please come up and say hello. Please come and answer our question of the week. It'd be so good to get all of you guys involved and in front of the camera. We had so much fun doing it yesterday and thank you so much to everyone who did come. And be part of the first ever pre-game wandering. There will be plenty more to come and hopefully a few unhinged post-game wanderings along the way.
Yeah, wow.
If the results can go our way. So be sure to come and find me. I'll post on my socials and Footy Besties, if you don't follow them already. They'll post on their socials where I will be ahead of each game. So Good Friday, we're on. And I'm sure all of you will be there with your royal blue and white best. So be sure to come find me. But we'll talk about that a little bit later this week.
Absolutely. I think that's all we've got to really talk about.
Yeah, let's get into the game.
One thing I will actually, we're going to start off on not a somber note, but I'm going to start off with a little bit of a call to arms for North fans right now. Just before we get into the podcast, I feel like when I talk to a lot of people outside the Bay, on the weekend, we're all sort of getting a little bit frustrated and almost fed up to a degree. Now, I would like just to say to North fans, I understand it's incredibly hard to keep being patient. And even myself sometimes, I'm kind of done with watching rubbish all the time. As North fans, I think we have to take this is year two of the rebuild and we have to just forget about the years before. It's hard to do that and it's not fair that we have to wait this long, maybe to be good again. But I really hope that everybody understands maybe exactly where we're at and it will turn, but it maybe is going to be a slower turn than we first thought like 4 or 5 years ago. There's a lot of people who are sort of saying to me, and I reflect these thoughts as well, that I'm kind of over watching us lose all the time. We love the team. We have no choice. It is going to turn. We've got Clarko. We've got Sheezel, Wardlaw, McKercher, Durs, Malarkey, LDU, Powell, all these guys. Stay as strong as you possibly can because if I believe, everyone should believe. And I do believe in the team, but I also think it's okay to be a little bit fed up and a little bit pissed off, I guess, with having to watch that every single week. So don't think you're a bad fan for being, you know, frustrated, but stick with them because it's going to turn, and when it does, it will turn in a fantastic way. But yeah, I just, there was a little bit of negativity floating around when I was talking to fans, and it doesn't come from a bad place at all, but I just thought I'd say that's my opinion on it all. I don't think it's bad to be frustrated. It's okay to be frustrated, but don't lose the belief.
I think we can all get a little bit frustrated at times. I'm also guilty of that. And I always say I don't believe in, you know, honourable losses, and I won't accept a loss, you know, really, no matter how well we played. And obviously there were huge chunks of yesterday's game where we were absolutely unstoppable. Oh, yeah. And that is really, really exciting signs for the future. But I think it's just playing. I also have to catch myself out. Yes, I'm definitely the positive Delulu one of the two of us. And I definitely do have quite an optimistic outlook at the best of times. But I think that it's because we all love the club and we all want to succeed. And I think
we support it in different ways.
Yeah. And I think we all demand, you know, I think it is important to demand more, because I don't think you want to become, you know, complacent. I don't think you want to accept mediocrity by
honourable losses are the thing now that I'm kind of already over. And I know it's going to have to be a process like that.
Honourable losses don't exist. I'm sorry if anyone think that they do. It's just an excuse for accepting mediocrity, basically.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, it is really important to demand more, and I think it is really important as a supporter base that
set
we
the
don't
high.
Absolutely, and that we, you know, we know that we're capable of putting out some scintillating football, as we, you know, showed yesterday in the first half of the game, and you know, we are able to fight back, which we showed a couple of times against the Giants. But I think it's having, you know, being aware of all of that and also acknowledging this is a long game, and that, you know, we want to sustain this sort of success, and we want to hopefully, know, build towards a long period of success rather than spike and peak and that's it. So, yeah, look, keep coming to every game, keep turning up, keep getting behind the boys. You know, we were both there at the game yesterday, and the crowd was outstanding. You would have thought there was 40,000 people.
Bay 29 in there. Was rocking, Marnie.
Everyone was up and about. You know, there was only 17,500 there. I think that's not a bad crowd for North, considering Fremantle Grand Prix weekend.
Grand Prix weekend,
Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, for sure.
But if you can get to the games, keep coming, keep showing up. Support in numbers is what is really going to be a big contributor to our long-term success.
Yeah.
So if you can get there. And, you know, like we've said before, Bay 29 is a great place for you to come if you don't know people. You can go to the football with, or drag a couple of your non-North mates along, pay for their ticket. And, you know, there's a lot to like about the club, and they, you know, there's a lot of on-field signs that, you know, we are improving, and, you know, we are coming along nicely. So
I think so too. So anyway, that's just a little quick note. Everything we say, if it's overly emotional or not, or maybe we seem negative or too positive,
it's just because we care.
It's because we care. We support them in different ways, and it's okay to be frustrated, but we can't accept mediocrity, and the standard set high, and that means it's going to take longer to get there. So
100%.
Anyway, thank you to everyone who sent in the voice messages. What we're going to do this time, because we did get a lot, and we're a little bit strapped for time today, so I'm going to make a compilation. Maybe I'll put a few of them in here. We'll sprinkle some in the middle, put them at the end. I'll figure that out in editing. Everyone who sent their voice note in is going to get played in this episode. Apologies if you asked a question and we won't be able to get to it. It is my fault, just timing-wise, but we're going to put all your voice messages in. I'd say with the voice messages, let's make them reactions, maybe not necessarily questions, because we might put them as compilations so everyone gets their voice heard instead of just picking some, because I would like to get everybody their voice heard on the podcast.
If you do ever have any questions for us, you can reach us on the Further North socials, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, everything. We obviously, you know, we love having a chat about North, and we're more than happy to have a yarn with you guys. So definitely reach out if you do have any questions, or come and find us at the game.
Absolutely. So let's put some voice messages in here, and then I'll sprinkle them.
Okay, I'll let you do the editing. I don't do that part. I just show up and look good and talk North and go home.
That is fair.
Hey, Josh. Hey, Marnie. Hey, all of North Melbourne. Long time watcher, second time talker here. Obviously, I was at the game yesterday, so emotions played quite high. But the umpires, were they poopy?
G'day, Josh. You already know who it is. Two things. First off, do you think yesterday's performance is purely just a matter of we know how to play good footy, now we just have to do it for longer? Because that's really all I think it is. And secondly, is it time to unleash the chom?
Hey, guys. Graham here. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. What a difference a half a footy makes. The word that keeps coming to mind is leadership, or lack thereof. Have you guys seen it? That's 2 weeks in a row now that we've been overrun without so much of a whimper.
The Further North Pod curse. Have Chum on in the pre-season. Chum does not play games. Josh hasn't seen a win since 2018. Well, stop going to games, Josh! Stop going to games!
Disappointing loss, guys. We had Freo by the balls at halftime. We got to have the hunger. We got to have the dare. We have to put the foot down when it's there. Come on, we're better than that. Let's bounce back against the bloody Blues. Come on!
Okay, so let's get into the game. We're going to do this a little bit tighter and quicker than last week. But in the first quarter, we came out fairly strongly.
Firing.
Now, I've written down what goals we scored and Freo have scored. So at the end of the first quarter, it was 4-1 to 2-1. 2-goal lead. We didn't know the absolute belting they'd cop in the second quarter just yet. But we looked pretty good in this quarter, I think. We forced the first note I've got here for the positives, we forced the Dockers to kick backwards a lot. There was times where they carved us up through the middle, but it wasn't as consistent as the Giants. There was a lot of times we did put a lot of pressure on in our forward half, and we did force them to kick backwards.
Our pressure was excellent in that first half in particular. You know, we sort of just every time Fremantle had the ball, we sort of suffocated them a little bit,
yeah.
Which was awesome. We loved that. We loved that.
A refreshing change of pace.
But on the flip side as well, we were just on the attack constantly, pretty much the whole quarter. I mean, we scored the first goal within the first minute the game with Paul Curtis getting a free kick inside the forward 50. But the way that ball, I mean, Sherry just basically grabbed it out of the ruck. And he did that quite a bit yesterday, which I found really interesting. And we'll talk about Sherry a little bit later. But I think that, you know, he really stamped himself once again on this game. And I thought he played really, really well. Unfortunately, his opponent was the best on ground in Luke Jackson, but we will get to him later. But we were, you know, we were winning the clearances and we were just transitioning the ball, not just quickly, but cleanly into our forward 50, which was unbelievable. And, you know, the proof's in the pudding, 4 goals in the first quarter. And we started really strong.
Our transition was also good. We had that good bit of play building up sort of from half back, which ended in Jaden Stevenson kicking a goal that Larky shepherded through. We just had numbers around the contest, which is something which is one of the biggest pet peeves for me with North Melbourne, is we run out of players around contests. So I thought that was really, really good. The players of the first quarter for me, like, well, who kicked the goals? Like PC, Steve-O, Zerha and Larky all kicked goals. It was a good spread sort of in the forward line. The only negative I've really got from the first quarter was we just gave up another late goal.
Well,
which
that's
is
vintage
going
North
to be
Melbourne.
A trend.
Giving up red time goals is something that we do way too often.
Absolutely. But then the second quarter. So we were killing them at one point. Now, when we kicked 4-3 and they kicked 3-4 in the end, but they got 2 goals incredibly late, which is sort of for a negative on this quarter, the only negative, so we can finish on the positives actually. We missed 3 very gettable chances in this quarter, which could have put us up by well over 50 points. I don't know. We got up by 32 and then at the end of the quarter, it ended being 18 points. And what it could have been, we could have looked at a massive, massive lead, which clearly would have helped us with how the third quarter panned out.
100%. I think from the sort of the 20-ish minute mark of the second quarter up until three-quarter time, Fremantle just absolutely annihilated us. And unfortunately, I think that is, and we've said this pretty much all year, is we're going to be strong on the attack and we're going to score a lot higher than we have maybe previously, but then going the other way, it's going to be really, really hard to stop the bleeding. And we'll get to the third quarter shortly. I think, unfortunately, not taking our opportunities was probably a killer more than once throughout
Absolutely,
the game.
100%.
Because after, and I know I'm jumping a little bit here, but it's relevant. Not only are there a few missed opportunities in the second quarter, but we came out at the start of the fourth and we actually looked to really match Fremantle and we kind of looked like we were up and about again, but there was a couple of missed opportunities. Eddie Ford missed one and Zach Fisher missed one and then Larky dropped an absolute sitter.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, that's also not making the most for opportunities. We were within, you know, 19 points at one point in the last quarter.
Yeah, we were.
And so, again, to not take our opportunities. And I think those things will come, but I think that that's sort of – this was, at this point in the game, really winnable. And, I mean – Fremantle have had a really good start to the year, but are they that good that they would have been able to come back from a 50-point deficit?
Probably not.
I don't think so.
Probably not. A couple of positives from the second, I think. I got a note here, like Paul Curtis took a really strong contested mark in front of goal. LDU was much better in this game. I gave him a little bit of criticism last week, and fairly, in my opinion.
I don't think you were alone in that either.
No.
But it just comes back to that point of like, we know what he's capable of, and it's just demanding more.
It's because the standard is so high.
100%.
So he was much more composed while getting tackled in the contest in this game. He's fired off a handball.
He just looked really strong.
Yeah, he did. He wasn't getting dragged to the ground. And, you know, he was composed in the contest, which ended up, you know, a little bit of play and leading into a Paul Curtis mark, which was really good. I think this quarter was the most pure form of North ball we've ever seen.
Yeah.
I've got another note here. The link-up play was unreal, but even Jerry was hitting little inboard kicks. And he took a contested mark on the wing, I'm pretty sure, and then kicked it like 20 metres inboard. And I'm like, that's wild.
What a difference he's making.
If Jerry
this
is taking the piss, North is taking the piss. So, and another first half performance we'll talk about as well is Toby Pink, someone I criticised last week, maybe a little bit too harshly, but I don't think anything I said was wrong. I just think maybe being his first game, it was a bit harsh. But he really stepped up in this first quarter. Some really important marks. Spoils took a good contested mark.
I thought he was good yesterday.
I thought he was really, really good yesterday, and a really good bounce back from getting bullied last week. And I think it shows something about him. I think it's good that he's more of a mature age recruit to be able to be mentally strong enough to come back and put in that sort of performance after getting muscled last week.
That first half, or from, you know, half and, you know, whatever, I think that football could challenge any team in the competition.
Yeah, if we can ever tighten up defensively, because the only other note I've got about this quarter that was negative, we're still leaving players open in our defence, and we're playing a high line and we're playing in this zone thing. And I don't know, they failing to spoil and like turning the ball over quickly, or a missed handball a couple of times, led to those late goals in the quarter, and that's really was the undoing. Looking at the game as a whole, the third quarter was the thing that killed us. I think you're right. Like, if we took a couple of opportunities in the fourth, we basically matched them. So North bleeding goals right at the end of a quarter is vintage North, as
it
we
is,
know.
Yes.
But, you know, it's just the skill errors, and it's the little things like that that really let us down. That comes with maturity and age, but we want to see it soon. But 90% of that quarter, we were fantastic.
It was also really, really good to see Jai Simkin back in action. I know he obviously had a quieter game by his standard.
He didn't
on
play
return.
In the midfield too much.
No,
though.
So he definitely rotated, you know, up forward. He kicked a couple of goals and then through the middle. One thing I will say about this game, which really impressed me, and the forward line is probably going to be the biggest point of discussion this week. We had a really good spread of goal kickers yesterday. Larky just wasn't himself. I don't know. The most disappointing performance I've seen from him for a while. And this has always been my biggest concern, is that if something happened to him, be it an injury or yesterday, he was just completely – I mean, Alex Pierce just wore him like a rag.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whether it's one of those two things happen, you know, we need someone else to step up. And it was actually really pleasing.
Yeah.
Curtis got involved. Simkin got involved.
Zerha
got involved.
Powell got a couple of goals.
Exactly. Ford came in the fourth quarter and he kicked one. And so I think there was a really good even spread of contributors. And I think that's really, really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that was something that was really, really impressive. Everyone played their role just about in that first half in particular.
Yeah. So let's get on to the third.
We have to.
We're going to talk about a couple of moments that did happen. One of the moments in this quarter, we kicked one goal one and they kicked 7-5, which is just appalling.
That goal didn't come until late in the third either.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we were getting absolutely bullied. So a few things that happened. Luke McDonald infringed on a Jackson shot at goal in the pocket. Looking back at it, watching it this morning, I'm not sure that that's a free kick. He definitely started running too early, but he was very far away, and I'm not sure he really did infringe. Jackson also put that out on the full.
Yeah, and that's what kills you. Yeah. And he gets the free kick right in front of goal.
But I also think a player like Luke McDonald
Well, you've got to know better.
Smarter than that.
Yeah.
But I also don't think he did anything wrong. And I think the umpiring in this quarter, not to be a Salty fan, because I know how it sounds, but geez, there was some absolutely shocking decisions.
In the final quarter. In the last final quarter as well. Yeah, as well.
I've got another note here. They started chopping us up in transition. Like, our centre clearances in this quarter were rubbish. Every stoppage, I think Brayshaw kicked a goal from a stoppage right in the forward pocket. Again, he just dribbled along the ground through all of our players' legs and no one tackled him, bumped him. There wasn't any pressure there. Jackson basically in this quarter became a fourth midfielder. And I think this is where Jerry's game went from really solid to... I still think he was good on the day, and I'm not blaming him whatsoever.
I think but he was good, but Jackson was the best on the ground.
Won the matchup.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He was, like I said, he was picking the ball up off the ground like Christian Petrarca does and running forward.
Yeah, he's a very dangerous player.
Yeah, and we don't have an answer for that. So he really became that fourth midfielder around the contest, and I think that was the reason that we were undone.
Well, unfortunately, I just don't think we have a lot of answers in general in that third quarter, and we saw this against St Kilda as well. We just can't stop the bleeding.
Yeah.
And it only took, I mean, Fremantle probably, and like I said just before, they probably took control of the game from about 20 minutes into the second quarter up until three-quarter time, and we had nothing.
Yeah.
We had no answer. We could not stop them at all.
Yes.
And I'm not – Fremantle have had a really good start to the year, so I don't want to take anything away from them either. And they do travel quite well, which I don't – I know, and I seem to watch Fremantle weirdly closely. For someone who doesn't really care that much,
that's a whole separate podcast.
Yeah,
Marty.
Seriously. So I think that, you know, credit where it's due. They obviously outplayed us. But I just think we, and it's something that happened against St Kilda in the preseason game as well. We can't stop the bleeding, and I felt. You said to me before we jumped on air that you never felt comfortable with that lead that we held against Fremantle, mm-hmm. right? Interestingly enough, I was excited, but I also could kind of see it coming undone because it's happened so many times before.
Yeah.
Flip it, and I think back to last week against the Giants, and sometimes that game felt so much closer than it actually was because our fight and our determination to keep coming back and to keep answering everything the Giants was throwing at us was really, really impressive.
We had that for three quarters of this game, though.
So I wonder what it will take to get that mindset shift, because I think if we have the shift, if we have the mentality that we're the hunting – we seem to really just absolutely go for it 100%. Mm. But when it flips and we become the hunted, sometimes we just don't have the answers.
No, absolutely. And I'm assuming that comes with maturity. Recruiting some better defensive players as well, I think, is a massive thing. Like, we're so attacking, and I'm looking back at the back six, and geez, we've barely got anyone who can defend down there that isn't like a key position player.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get onto individual players later, but, you know, everyone who can transition off that back line is awful defensively.
I wonder what Jasper Pittard's doing.
Okay, well, it's time to move on. That's coming up. The only positive from this quarter was George Wardlaw took a really good contested mark on
my
50.
God.
My favourite,
so
George Wardlaw. And he kicked a great goal from outside 50 as well.
And
so if
he can, not his strong point normally.
No,
so
but he was good on the day.
He
hit
was
Simkin
really good.
For a really good one.
Yeah.
It nearly got intercepted, I won't lie. But, you know, a good inboard kick when he was running along the wing. Wardlaw was great today, or yesterday, whenever it was. And, really good goal. If he can start kicking goals consistently as well, that's like the LDU thing where if LDU can add goals to his game, then he becomes Petrarca, right?
Mm.
So – can we get that? I think Wardlaw has that ceiling, absolutely. And it's really good to see that. He's only kicked two goals in his whole career, but he hasn't played 11 games.
He is special, though.
Oh, he's incredibly special.
And yesterday we spoke about Wardlaw, the Giants. He had a really strong first half, and then he probably tapered off in the second half. But I actually thought he was quite strong across all four quarters. He sort of had a bit of an impact. So, again, that's just another improvement once again, another step up for him.
So the fourth quarter, 2-5 to 3-2. Clearly a lot more points. That suggests we had chances.
Which we did.
But we did not take them. So one of the things we'll talk about from this quarter, the ball in the back pocket for us hit the post and hit the point post on the full and then hit the ground, and they didn't review it or anything like that. We could see it on the screen in slow-mo. It clearly hit the post So it would have been out on the full.
Robbed.
And then obviously they got – I think they might have got a goal from that as well. Or they definitely got the ball back and at least put something on the scoreboard. But, you know, it's little things like that that were really frustrating about the umpiring today, and we don't want to be those people that talk about the umpires. Everyone always says that because it's easy to blame umpires when things don't go your way. But the second half and these some of these more decisions in the fourth are shocking. And we did – and when the game was in the balance like it was after we got belted the quarter before, but we were still only like, what, three goals down?
Yeah.
It's just not good enough, you know. We were 19 points behind at that point where that ball hit the post, and we didn't get our opportunity. We didn't get the ball back to transition or anything like that. So it was disappointing.
It just seems like with the – and again, we don't want to be the umpire bashers, but I think just generally – across the board, so far we've, you know, we're coming to the end of the third round of the season now, and at the end of round two, and it just, I think with umpiring, you want them to facilitate the game, but you don't want them to be kind of the center of attention of the game.
Yeah.
And it kind of seems like the umpires have really been a focal point for the first three rounds of the season. Like, they're actually, you just don't
want the amount of score reviews that happened when I went to the Dogs and the D's,
yeah,
in round two, and the amount of score reviews at that game was out of control. And I know this is the opposite of what we're saying now. They didn't review. I don't even know if they can review like an out on the full call. I'm assuming they can't.
It was so obvious though. But just make the right call from the start.
Exactly. Other things in this quarter, like Larky dropped a very easy mark, 30 out from goal directly in front. Once again, it was like three goals the difference. So we could have absolutely gained momentum from that. It's very unlucky. Like, this wasn't a contested mark. It was a very, very simple one. My favourite, George Wardlaw, did mess up a handball coming off half back.
Yeah.
Tried to handball over a player, got intercepted, and literally one kick over our heads, and there was Jaya Miss, I think, was in the goal square for that one. So that was very disappointing. It's clearly just lack of...
polish.
Lack of polish, because speaking of polish, Sheezel misses a handball to McKercher. We put some really good play running through the corridor, and Sheezel misses a handball to McKercher.
Which is
and
very McKercher, unlike him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. McKercher would have put that inside 50, and he's a player I want kicking into our 50.
Yeah, definitely.
He put the ball at his feet. McKercher fumbled it. They scooped it up. One kick, goal.
Well, it's so, what I just said, touched on before. I think, like, yes, and obviously a lot of us who were there, if not all of us, are really frustrated with the umpiring, but it's never just about the umpiring. And we know that very well. There were a lot of missed opportunities, particularly in that last quarter. And like I said, we were within 19 points at one stage. And, you know, Larky had a dirty day. And, you know, for him to miss that, you know, drop that sit-up, really disappointing. You've got a couple of guys, you know, scoring, you know, missing goals they probably should have kicked.
Yeah.
And they probably should have put away. So, look, I think that there's – I walk away, it's frustrating. At the end of this game, I was pretty cut, and it really hurt. And I think why it hurt so much is because it was so good. And you're sitting there at halftime and thinking, wowee.
And it's how good it was and how quickly it got ripped away, and in the fashion it got ripped away from us. And I think, like we said at the start.
So hard and fast.
Yeah, I'm glad we're not podcasting directly after that game, because I would have definitely had some thoughts that maybe I don't think exactly now. A couple of good things, I guess, in the fourth quarter. Our effort was back, and we did find that again. The execution wasn't there, but the effort, like we sort of had against the Giants, did come back.
We were a lot more composed in that last quarter.
Yeah, and we did have opportunities to get back in that game, and I think that's another positive thing to take from it. Bailey Scott's goal in the last minute
beautiful.
Of the game was also very nice.
He was very, very good just in general yesterday as
he was
well,
very
I
good.
Thought.
But then, obviously, you know, yeah, 2 goals, 5 to 3 goals, 2 in the last. We didn't get the points. And yeah, I understand the emotion from all the North fans, and I was one of those. But after sleeping on it, watching the replay of it this morning and having a few more thoughts about it, it was a three-quarter performance, barring a couple of missed opportunities that we would normally take, which is just footy. It was the one quarter that undid us, and it wasn't a half of football. I know the fourth quarter doesn't feel great because that's obviously we lost, but we did play three quarters of pretty decent football. And if we could have... in that third quarter, even been stemmed half of the bleeding or like 2-3 goals or like even 2 goals, I think we're right in it and we could have won that game. So it's not maybe as dire as it feels, but being so good and so bad makes it feel worse than I think the overall performance was.
Well, I just think from here we need to continue in an upwards trajectory. Yeah. Because I think not only are we a young side, we also have a lot of fresh faces and a lot of people that haven't played footy together. And we spoke about the back line last week specifically and on that same point. But you could probably really sprinkle that throughout most of the team now. In hopefully we can get some consistency in this core 18-ish players. And then you'll obviously have people coming in and out at the side, which I know we'll speak about later. But if overall we can sort of continue on this upwards trajectory, then hopefully, you know, by round 7, 8 and 9, we can stem the bleeding. We do take more of our opportunities. We can start to get a few wins on the board.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, that display in the first half,
it was fantastic.
We'd beat anyone.
Yeah.
We'd actually, if we could string not even four quarters of that, if you can string
three to three and a half
quarters of that together, or if you can string, you know, three quarters of that together and then you can manage the fight back that comes the other way in return,
you
could put just about anyone away.
Yeah, no,
and that's incredibly positive from someone who's sat there. You know, all of us have sat there over the last sort of 24 to 36 months and just watched us getting belted week in, week out.
And that's the thing. Like, you know, I don't blame any fan for being incredibly angry and frustrated after that game, but being a young side, and it's not fair that we still have to be saying this after 5 years of pretty rough football, but we are a young side and we don't have any choice but to be patient. As much as we are sick of the last few years and the rebuild starting again and again and again, we've got Clarkson, we've got the right talent. Now finally we have to put those years behind us. It's year two of Clarkson, it's year two of the rebuild.
I'd argue this is the start. I'd argue we're two games in. I mean, last year almost felt like a wasted season, to be honest.
Almost, but I guess the emergence of Larky in that season, Sheezel, you know, getting Wardlaw.
That's true, actually.
I think that's what I take from it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
that's
we probably didn't progress on the field as a team as much as I wanted, but the fact we got those guys and we found those players who are taking a step now, at the team can more step with them, I think is reason to be positive from last season.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know what I mean?
I take that back.
God, Marnie. No, it's fine. Sorry, that was me.
I'm letting you win.
Marnie
for
said
once.
I was right, guys. Clip that up and put that on social media.
Doesn't
for me.
Doesn't happen often.
Because it's not going to happen very often.
Because usually I am the one that's right. Anyway, moving on.
Hey, Josh and Marnie. Jesse Stevenson here. Been listening since day dot. Absolutely loved your attempts at a kick at quarter time. Was it the game? Question, do we liquid nail a helmet to CCJ and maybe he will become what Tristan Sherry has become?
I actually had to check at halftime if McDonald was playing. I saw him in the second half. He turned it over every time he touched it, but I saw him. Pink, done. Jones, done. We were so wayward in front of goal. We need to kick straight to win games.
All in all, a positive performance, dropped off in another quarter again. Would be nice to string together four quarters and get some wins. Some players coming in, some players going out, that's for sure.
Like the first quarter, the second quarter, that was fantastic. Instead of kick bombing it long to the forward line, they were trying to draw everyone on the tip, which looked fantastic. Loved what I saw. Half time came, 3 o'clock, had to leave to go to work. Glad I missed the second half. Keep up the good work. Love the show.
G'day, guys. Long-term listener, first-time poster here. Three things I learnt this week. Number one, I think I may be in love with George Wardlaw. Number two, I realise how much I hate Fremantle supporters. And number three, CCJ has to go.
So some talking points.
Yes.
I'm just going to go through these and you give me your thoughts, Marnie. Luke Jackson bullied us today. I don't necessarily think Sherry was bad at all. I think he had another decent game. But Luke Jackson daddied our entire team. He was fantastic.
Yeah, Sherry was good. Jackson was better. Definitely best on ground for Fremantle. And, you know, it's sort of for them, it's great. I mean, they lured him across from the D's and, you know, there was a bit of question around his form when he first arrived at Freo, but he's really, you know, paying, you know, showing everyone why they paid so much to bring him across. He was excellent. And like I said, and like you said, we're not taking anything away from Sherry. He was really good yesterday, but Jackson looked a class above and he's an incredibly dynamic player and he's got a lot of dimensions and he's athletic and he's skillful, and what he was able to do just put everyone to shame.
He's the perfect 2024 ruckman to me. That guy who can is athletic. He took a great pack mark over the top of a pack in that game as well to kick a goal. Athletic, fast, good at ground level. I would love to have a ruckman like that. Like I've turned on Jerry and he's having a very, very good year. But that is Luke Jackson is the ruckman I would love to have in this team, or that archetype of ruckman. But hey, we've got Jerry and
his helmet.
And his helmet, which is fantastic. We did a lot better this week with the tolls. Obviously, Jaya Miss and Tracy and Tabana, I think, were the three tolls up there.
Yeah.
We did a lot better with them. Obviously, not as experienced as the Giants forwards, but all those tolls are still defending tolls are still a massive problem for our team. We did a lot better. So credit to the defense. Callum Dawson, another really good game. Pink was much, much better. We'll talk about Aiden Corr. We have a differing opinion on Aiden Corr in this game. Stay tuned for that one, guys. But, yeah, we did better handling tolls, but, yeah, we didn't – it's still probably not good enough.
Yeah, and I think Damo touched on in the preview pod, he did say that their forward line and the Fremantle's tall forwards were their weakest point as well. And so, unfortunately, you know, last week we were heavily exposed, and I think against Carlton we could be in for something similar with the Possibly. Twin Towers of Mackay and Kerno.
We've got a list spot. Aiden Bonner can still come back.
Oh, God. Dylan, if you're listening.
Yeah, Dylan, yeah. Shout out to the number one Aiden Bonner
cheering,
fan.
He'll be cheering listening to this. Yeah, so look, they held up not badly, especially in that third quarter. We were under siege and they did their absolute best. But I think that...
It's more on the midfield. I think it's more on the midfield defensively in the halfbacks to not let it come in so quick.
I think there's only so much that the tall defence can do.
If it's coming in that quickly, absolutely.
Yeah, and they really... I mean, I think all of them were really brave when we were completely under siege. I just think that it's... You know, you need the small defenders and the midfielders, as you said, to kind of stop the ball from at least coming in that quickly and just to give them a bit of time to defend because so often they were caught out because it just was coming in at a frenetic pace. So definitely we're better, but I do agree with you. We've still got a few issues down back there.
Do you think there's any reason why we can't play four quarters other than we're young?
Maybe a bit of a mental thing as well.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think we've been so poor for so long that maybe that self-belief, we just don't have it yet.
Yeah, that's fair.
I also think, yeah, look, I think we've spoken about this quite a lot over the past few weeks. We are shifting to this more attacking, high-risk sort of football.
It's going to be it's part and parcel with that type of footy.
Exactly. So we know that going, you know, we're on the attack and we saw it so often yesterday. I mean, the way we were able to move the ball by hand in the middle of the ground was pretty special. But then, yeah, coming back the other way, it was just, hard. I do think that we're young. We probably not necessarily have that endurance to match it with the top teams as well. But I think probably a bit of a mental thing as well. Yeah. We are so used to being so bad for so long that, you know, we sort of start to panic when a team sort of starts to get on top of us.
It's a bit of here we go again, I think,
And so we do kind of need that reset, be it at halftime, three-quarter time, to just recompose. But I think with a bit more experience, and I think as the season goes on, we'll be able to see more of that football played consistently over majority of the game.
One of my biggest faults maybe this year more than last year, and I guess it is because of the attacking game we're playing, missed tackles in our midfield.
Yeah.
This is becoming out of control. When we get the ball out of the middle, we look great, but we cannot stop that ball going back the opposite way if it's not tapped directly to us. I want to see more defensive pressure from our mids, from Lazaro, from Powell, you know, who had a great game and we'll talk about him. But like LDU, Simkin, whoever's in there, I just think we need more of a focus on trying to stop them just running straight back the opposite way.
Yeah,
like I just don't see enough physicality in there. And like the amount of missed tackles in the midfield area by us, like the Fremantle players were bouncing off us like a pinball sometimes.
But I think that our midfield, and I don't want to include LDU in this discussion because while I know that we demand more of a defensive effort from him, his ability to bring the ball out of the midfield
and
bring it, you know, really cleanly into the forward, I think his skill is really valuable. So, you know, leave that. And then leave Wardlaw.
Wardlaw does it. Wardlaw absolutely does it.
no one in our midfield is really that intimidating.
No.
Aside from George Wardlaw. The only person that comes into the midfield that actually would make me, you know, shit bricks is Cam Zerha.
Yeah,
right?
With
the exception of him, we don't have an intimidating midfield.
I don't know if Tom Powell's putting the fear in anybody yet. Not yet. I think
with Tom Powell, that will come with consistency. And another thing we'll talk about, which we spoke about earlier today, was the Lazaro Phillips Powell debate, because I think that's going to be a really interesting storyline for us throughout the year. But I just think, like, as good as some of those players are, like as good as a Simkin is when he went into the middle, or as good as Powell is, or, you know, who even Will Phil if he comes in, they're not intimidating.
Yeah, well, that sort of goes on to the next point. I think Zerha came into the middle way too late. I don't think he attended a centre bounce until the fourth.
Yeah.
And I think Clarko needs to break that glass in case of emergency so quickly. They were dominating us in that third quarter out of the middle, and he needed to put Zerha had a very quiet second quarter from memory, and definitely wasn't doing anything in the third because the ball wasn't down there. So he needs to throw Zerha in that middle, in the middle, as his first option to make a change.
Well, we saw last week after halftime Zerha came into the middle and how
completely he changed the game.
He did. Yeah. Or just play Hugh Greenwood. I wouldn't mind that option as well.
Simkin and McDonald, what do you think of both of their returns?
Fine. Like, I think
Simpkins is a bit underrated. Simpkins kicked a couple of goals.
He kicked two goals. I mean, as you did mention, Josh, he did play a lot, spent a lot of time in the forward line.
He was playing off that half forward, and I think him and Lazaro were sort of swapping in and out a lot.
I think both of them played well. I don't think that either of them, you know, did anything horribly wrong. And I think that, yeah, fine. Like nothing. I don't have any real comment either way.
Yeah, I think Simkin it was good. I think, you know, better than just fine for me, I think, for Simkin, considering the concussion and all that sort of stuff. But his contribution in the forward line was very, very good.
He kicked two really nice goals, and it was really good to see everyone get around him.
Yeah, McDonald, once again, I don't want McDonald to be this scapegoat this year. I mean, McDonald was fine. He was tagging a lot of the time. He's not the guy this year that needs to be running out of defence, and I think people still see him as that. So I don't think McDonald did anything wrong
in this game. I think he was
fine after not playing anything in the preseason. I think he was fine. Zane Dersma, this is a guy that, you know, maybe was 5 out of 10 this game, or like 6 out of 10 or something like that. He didn't have maybe as good of a game or have as much impact on the game as he did.
He wasn't as flashy, that's
for sure.
He wasn't as flashy, but
11 marks.
Yeah,
he took
really
11
good.
Marks. One thing I noticed from him, he was fantastic at pushing down to the back 50 to be the first receiver of Sheezel kicking out of the back.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting seeing him drop that deep. I don't really want him to drop that deep because he's a good contested mark or someone who's always going to challenge in the forward line. But 11 marks is a great result for him. And missed a goal he should have kicked, but it's only his second game in AFL football. But I thought his work rate was really, really good. And 11 marks in the game and him pushing down in that back pocket. The defender was hot on his heels too, and he was really clean with his hands. So a really good sign from Zane there.
No, I think so too. And he's going to be a real special player for us. I think while you might not want him to be the one pushing up, you definitely prefer him to be that over Larky. And I think last week Larky pushed up the ground way too often. Unfortunately, Larky didn't have a good game yesterday at all.
Yeah,
it doesn't probably impact us as much in that respect. But I think, it was great. I think Dersma still had a solid game. So
it was fine. It was fine, yeah.
I think both of them probably were really, really good last week. McKercher, I think, was still good yesterday. Probably just didn't have that same obvious impact as he probably did last week.
I thought McKercher was better this game. We'll talk about McKercher. But I thought he was better this game than the GWS game.
No, I think that he – yeah, it's 11 marks. I mean, for a team that – is usually outmarked by the opposition. It's nice to have a clean set of hands in there.
Jaeger O'Meara was the sub for Fremantle, and he came on, I think, at the start of the fourth. I think him and Jackson were probably the two biggest reasons why they won this game. His stat line's not going to look great because he didn't play a quarter, but his toughness and composure around the ball I thought was really, really good. Every centre clearance or bounce or anything like that, I thought he impacted it really, really well. And I would love a player like that to be a more experienced body, have a bit of toughness and be able to get the ball off the ground and feed it out. And I think Jackson was the reason for the whole game they won it, but his fourth quarter really made sure that we didn't win that game. I just want to give some praise his way. I didn't know he played for Fremantle until, until I saw him as the sub. No, that's a lie, I did. But yeah, look, props to Jaeger. I think he played really well in that fourth, and that's a perfect example of how to use the sub, because I'm skeptical that just a midfielder coming on is good for a sub. But hey, inside 50 efficiency, let's talk about this. Better than last week, still awful. 42% to 60%
inside 50. Yeah, Freo were really, really effective going inside.
Like, I don't think I've ever seen North Melbourne hit more than 50%. If we could, if we can get 50% plus inside 50 efficiency and take those chances, which we did in against GWS but not against Freo, I think what you're saying is true, where we can really put away some sides. I just can't get over how awful our inside 50 entry is. And we still go back to that long kick, which doesn't work.
Frustrating as well, particularly in that last quarter. The ball did spend over 50% in our forward half.
Yes, it did.
So the fact that we just can't convert is frustrating.
It's getting the chances, though.
Well, it's like banging your head against a brick wall. I mean, this is the same issue year in, year out. Yeah. Not even week in, week out. Like, this is an age-old thing. And it's lowering the eyes. I mean, there were a couple of passes into our forward 50 that hit players' lace out. There was one kick. I think it was McKercher kicked it to Zerha, who marked it. And he kicked it
where... It was a great kick. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. He kicked
it
where he wanted Zerha to be rather than where he was.
But dropped it over the top of the defender in front of Zerha, who was sagging off him.
And then he ran into space. And when, you know, when we had the likes of Drew Petrie and Jared Waite and Ben Brown on our list, it was a lot of that magnetic ball. We'd kick it 10 metres out and a player, you know, one of them could just run into it.
That's the thing we needed to do to Larky, though. And I know Larky dropped one that they laid on a plate for him, but...
We don't give him great delivery.
No,
either.
We don't. We don't. So that needs to be better.
100%.
Hitouts. We won the hitouts 36 to 25. We won the stoppages 38 to 34. The thing, the difference there was we'd get the hitout, but then Jackson would be on the ground ready to pick the ball up and be a fourth midfielder.
Jackson also won the hitouts to advantage yesterday.
He did.
And it's something I've actually never really like picked up on until you mentioned it last week, and then I was, you know, they rotate the stats on the TV at the ground, and Jackson won the hitouts to advantage, and you know, it's not really until you think about it that you're like, oh wow, okay, yeah, that there is a really big difference. On the flip side, Sherry did just rip a few straight out of the ruck and disposed of it really well, and I thought that was quite comical, and it actually worked a few times, so good on him.
Contested possessions were much better this week. We still didn't win them, but 118 to 127 contested possessions. I think LDU's game goes a long way to that stat.
Yep.
He was much better keeping his feet. While he was getting tackled, he kept his composure and he didn't seem as nervous to take on contact and cop contact. Still would like him to be a little bit more stronger defensively, but a much better game and a good response. Stat line looks similar, but when you go there and watch the games or you watch it on TV.
He was much better this week and he had a much bigger impact.
A bigger impact, exactly.
Yep.
And made sure we won more out of the middle, which was really important. We won marks inside 50.
We've just banged on about how poor our delivery is inside 50, but hey.
Well, yeah, a lot of those were contested. Like Paul Curtis took a couple uncontested. Zerha took a good contested one. I don't think I've ever seen North Melbourne win marks inside 50. I guess it's yay. We won 15 to 13 marks inside 50. Clearly, we didn't take those opportunities.
No,
enough,
unfortunately.
That's a good sign.
I think
we took single digits last week. I can't exactly. It's only like six or something like that. But that's better and a positive to take, I 100%. Guess, when we're searching for positives. But contested marks, this is the biggest flaw bar our defensive ability in the midfield for me is contested marking.
Well, we're just not strong enough.
6 to 11 contested marks in the game. The disparity was much bigger last week because the Giants are stronger in that area. But, yeah, we just don't have anyone who can do it. Jerry is getting better at that. But, hey, we still just don't have anyone I trust to be able to be that bailout option on the wing.
Yeah.
And until we get that player, if we had a player that we could lump the ball to on the wing when we can't get it out of our 50 and there's a 50-50 chance where he takes the mark, that would open up our team so much. But that guy is not on the list unless Sherry starts to really stick them. But let's see if we can get him a couple of Travis Cloak gloves. I think that'd be really nice.
To go with his beautiful helmet.
They've got to be a matching set. That'd be cute.
Well, they can sell that at the roof shop.
You watch out.
Your Halloween costume.
we have to do oh god we have to do Bay 29 like and find just like cheap foam helmets and all dresses as Sherry one day.
You can do that. I won't be partaking.
I will be passing you one of the helmets ASAP. We lost the tackles 42-59. I think that speaks to a lot of what I'm saying out of the midfield. The amount of times that we did not stick tackles and their players bounced off us.
Well, they just walked it through our midfield
so yeah, often. But we had opportunities to tackle and we just didn't stick them.
Why?
I don't
not
know.
Not strong enough still, I guess. It comes back to that point. I mean, our midfield isn't intimidating either way.
Yeah. Exactly. And Matt, as much as I think – I actually have never minded Matthew Lloyd's commentary on the game until maybe the last 6 months, and I think he's too long on Channel 9 clearly and he's starting to be really negative. But he was talking about like not having a sweeper around the back of the contest because as soon as the ball spilt out to Freo, there was a paddock for them to run into.
Yeah.
And where every player for us is trying to play offensively and there's no one to defend. And
I actually don't disagree with that though. I think that
no, it's fair analysis.
It's coming out of the contest, but it's also, you know, when a ball's coming inside 50, either way, all of our players fly either to spoil or to take the mark in the attacking 50 and there's no one at ground level.
Yeah, no, it's true. And like, does someone off the back flank, when the ball's bounced, sprint directly to the back of the contest and try and be that sweeper or off the wing?
Is that something
Dylan Stevens can try and do or something like that? Because we'll come to him in a second. But anyway, that's just something that I thought was disappointing because North Melbourne's also built on hard effort, tackling, toughness, and we haven't really been showing that with our stats the last few years. So we need to get back to that.
I think so.
All in all, we've talked about this, so we won't talk about this too much. But the third quarter was the thing that really lost us the game. And I think the rest of the quarters were good enough. So to end this segment on a positive note, we did play three quarters of pretty decent footy.
I think so.
The first half was really, really good. The last quarter was probably good enough if we didn't play atrociously in the third.
So. And I think the pleasing thing for me sitting here is for the first time in years, you can actually sort of start to see what the game plan is and what we're 100%. Trying to do. And it's probably something particularly under David Noble that it was impossible to know what on earth was going on. I don't think the players knew what was going on half the time. So how we were ever meant to know, I don't know. No. And so, yeah, I think that's that. And like I said before, that first half is that our best looks like it's good enough to beat anyone. So I'm very, very much looking forward to, you know, us sitting here in the next, you know, 5 to 6 weeks and thinking, well, maybe things will kind of start, all the pieces will kind of start falling into place.
True. So let's go to best on ground and who we wanted more from. So let's skip through these. We won't take too long. Tom Powell, 28 disposals, 2 goals, 85% disposal efficiency and 8 clearances. I think that's his best game for the club.
I thought he was our best yesterday. I thought he was sensational. And it is a debate that has run right through our supporter base pretty much since he was drafted alongside Phillips and Lazaro is, you know, and I said that, you know, earlier in the episode that I think this will be a really big storyline for us throughout the season. He was outstanding. Yesterday he has signed a contract extension during the week, another 2 years it was reported, and so he's clearly, you know, looks to be the one they're going to look to invest in the immediate term. On the flip side, I know we'll talk about Lazaro, you know, from someone we wanted more of, but he unfortunately was subbed out.
Yep.
Whether that was completely his fault or whether he was once again a victim of being played out of position, I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And then Phillips wasn't selected once again. So, look, if Tom Powell can bring that kind of effort every single week,
we've got ourselves a player.
I think so too. I think we all know what he's capable of, and I think no one's ever doubted it.
No, absolutely.
But it's sort of giving these guys the space to do so.
Yeah, for sure. And that was the thing for me is like, you know, Tom Powell maybe different, especially last year, wasn't on that list. I would have probably played Phillips over him when we had Taron. You know, he's getting a game over him, and I couldn't see how Tom Powell would fit into this team. I never doubted Tom Powell, and I never sort of suggested he wasn't good enough to be in our team, but he just had too many players over the top of him. And we talked about this in the preseason podcast with Taron going now. Who does that open an opportunity for? And Tom Powell looks to be the one taking that opportunity, which is good.
That's great.
LDU, 30 possessions, 9 clearances, 8 inside 50s.
Also an excellent game.
A very, very good game. Biggest thing for me, which the stats don't show, stronger in the contest. Didn't get ripped to ground as easily. Better disposal. I would have liked a little bit more tackling from him, I guess. And when I say tackling, not just looking at the stats on the app and saying he got seven tackles. Tackles where he's sitting at the backside of the contest if it doesn't go directly to him to stop the bleeding. So stats won't show where the tackles were and how they affected the game, but much better from LDU. Much stronger in the contest, which I'm happy
stats
with.
Also won't. I mean, his stats are very similar to what it was on paper last week, but I think he had a much bigger impact yesterday around the ground and in the game. I think, yeah, he was excellent.
Yeah. Wardlaw, 23 touches. It's good to see him getting 20 plus. He needs to do that every week, George. I know you're listening, mate. Please, you know, I'm betting on you every week, my friend. Six marks, five clearances, and one goal. Six marks is awesome from George. I thought Wardlaw's disposal was much better this week. Last week wasn't his best game by foot, but getting around the ground and taking marks, it's probably the first time I've seen him take a couple of contested marks as well, or marks when there's pressure on him. So I think this is a massive Wardlaw game looking back at it. Getting 20 plus disposals, taking those marks, kicking that goal is stuff I haven't seen from him before.
I think when he played against Sydney last year, I think that's what everyone thinks of as the George Wardlaw game.
Oh, yes. His Essendon game, that step he did out of the contest on half back against Essendon, I'll never forget. The streets will never forget.
And while I don't disagree with that, I think this was a bit of a turning point.
But it didn't feel like he's come on the scene. It felt like to me that this is George Wardlaw. That's what he can do in a game.
Well, this is probably the first time I think he's really given us a genuine four-quarter performance. We've had so many highlight moments from George. And I'm not saying he's always really impressed me when he stepped out on the field. But for me, this was a little bit different to what we've seen from him in the past. It was a real complete game
It was
from
a complete
him.
Game. That's a perfect way to say.
And I think that's this game that we had against Fremantle from George Wardlaw is what I want every week.
100%.
Everyone wants the highlight reels, and he took that spectacular
mark.
He'll do
that just because he's that talented.
Yeah, and he took that spectacular mark and kicked a great goal late in the third quarter. But I think that for him, I want that four-quarter effort. His tackling and his pressure, I said at the start of the year, he's our barometer, and it's freaky that a kid in his second season is someone who's going to, you know, he's going to set the pace, he's going to set the tempo, but that's exactly what he does.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that, you know, he's just special. I don't know what else
to say. I'll say it. We love George Wardlaw.
We love George Wardlaw. I love George Wardlaw too.
I love him more.
Very, very special player.
Paul Curtis, two goals, two, and great pressure in the forward line. But I think Paul Curtis is having a very good year. Maybe a few more goals would be nice, but he kicked three last week or two? It was one or the other. So he's either got four or five for the year. But his contested marking is incredibly good for his size. He can play on the ground. But his forward pressure is fantastic. And I think it goes under the radar a lot. He put a tackle in right in front of Bay 29 up on the forward 50 that stopped the Dockers from transitioning straight away. And it's that sort of stuff that he does better than anyone else in our forward line.
I was pretty harsh on him at the start of the year, and everyone knows I left him out of my best 23 at the start of the season because I think his best and his worst are too far apart, and I think he's just can be really unpredictable. He's changed his game this season.
Yeah.
I think he's turned into a much more even contributor, and rather than being – and I do think he's got that superstar potential, and I don't ever want him to lose that, but he's come in and he's given two really solid performances.
Yeah.
He's contributed really well attackingly and defensively. And I think that's something that has really impressed me with, you know, the general discussion.
The consistency
and the discussion around our side, obviously, after the first two rounds is that we just lack defensive effort and pressure. And so the fact that we can sit here and say, well, this is someone that's delivering that and also contributing on the scoreboard like we need him to do has been really, really pleasing to start the season. So I think he was really good yesterday, and I definitely think that he's been definitely one of our best performers in the first couple of games of the year.
Sheezel, I mean, look, there's not much to say about Sheezel. 35 touches, six marks. He's always so relaxed. Did a lot of the kickouts on the weekend. Look, we don't have to say too much about Sheezel, I think. It's just another classic Harry Sheezel performance.
It's scary that this is his second season and, like, this is what we can come to expect from him already.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can't take that for granted.
Zach Fisher, I thought he was really, really good. 25 touches, 5 marks, 80% disposal efficiency. But the biggest thing for me was his accurate kicking out of the back line, especially when we were under the pump.
Yeah, incredibly composed. And this is the sort of thing that we want to see from him. Unfortunately, he missed that goal in the last quarter, and I don't want to highlight that as being the one thing I talk about of his game. But I think that we know that he's capable of kicking goals as well. So it would be nice to see him be able to finish.
It'll come.
But I think that under pressure, especially and under siege in that third quarter, he was really, really cool, calm, collected.
Yeah. Keeping on the defense, let's just bunch Pink and Dawson together here. A solid defensive performance from them. Good spoils. Especially the first half from Toby Pink. Bay 29 was going mental for Toby Pink.
Were you getting up and about in that?
He's my guy. I've never doubted him once.
No, never. Look, a week's a long time in footy.
Yeah, exactly. us fellow redheads have to stick together. So, no, I was happy with what I saw from Pink. Much better than last week. Dawson, very consistent. Clearly our best defender at the moment. A good outing from those two. Bailey Scott, 23 touches, 91% disposal efficiency. He was absolutely everywhere on that ground.
He's running?
Yeah.
Elite.
Yeah, it's elite. So he was absolutely everywhere. And once again, it's sort of just a standard Bailey Scott performance.
He was very good yesterday. I thought he was much better than last week as well. He was, you know, definitely playing more up the ground and more that classic wing role.
Oh, he looks much better
too
on the wing.
In defense.
And
I think that made a massive difference as well.
And McKercher is the last one we'll put in this highlighting our favourite players on the ground. 22 touches, 90% disposal efficiency.
Incredible.
Incredibly cool head.
He's had two really good games as well. Yep. I've been really impressed. I think, as you said, Dersma's probably been the flashier of the two.
McKercher's definitely contributed.
He's been excellent.
Yeah, for sure. Who do we want more from? The most disappointing one for me is my guy, Dylan Stevens. Eight touches.
Not a great start to the year.
The guy's meant to run all day. To be fair, the stats suggest he did. I looked this up. You can get the GPS stats on the AFL app, which I didn't know until last night. He led the team in work rate. He covered 15 kilometres in that game, but he only got 8 touches.
What do you think it is? Because he obviously has the tank to cover the ground, and that's something that I think is stopping us from putting a four-quarter performance together is stamina and endurance. So how can we get – because Bailey Scott, on the other hand, was in the best, so on the other wing.
Yeah.
You know, how do we get him more involved?
I think we attack on the right side of the ground a lot more. I don't know why, but we seem to attack down the right wing a lot more. Maybe it's because we've got so, like, all of our Sheasel is right footed on the back and he's usually kicking out. Maybe he goes that side a little bit more. Mm-hmm. The thing with Dylan Stevens, I think, because he's on the wing and Bailey Scott is probably, there's usually a more attacking winger and a more defensive winger. I don't know if that's what we're playing, but hypothetically, that is fairly common. Dylan Stevens is probably the next link in the chain that we can't do. Like, if Jerry takes a mark on the wing, Dylan Stevens is probably the guy to get receive the handball and push it on, but we never get those marks and we never get that pressure-relieving moment that high up the ground. So I'm going to suggest that his work rate clearly isn't a problem with his GPS stats, but he needs to find a way to get around it more. Mm-hmm. I do think he's playing a more attacking role, so maybe that's why. Don't want to drop him at all. Give him time. He's played 2 games for North Melbourne. He's an experienced player. He needs time. But I do want to see more from him.
Yeah, I agree.
Jaden Stevenson, don't think he was bad at all, just lacked impact. He kicked a goal in the first quarter and didn't do much else for the rest of the game. Competed well around the ball, but he's not the quickest. He's not the most skillful by foot or by hand. Yeah, I just think
he's an interesting one, Jaden Stevenson.
Yeah, there's a couple of players that
I don't know how to feel.
Yeah, I'll go through who I think should be in and out in the preview podcasts, but I don't know. He's one that maybe makes way for somebody. I'm not upset either way, but I just don't fully think he's doing enough with, you know, the players maybe we've got waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
Or compared to what Curtis is doing, Eddie Ford maybe impacts a little bit more. I know he's been the sub, but I think I'd probably play Ford over Steve-O. It's hard. But look, as for yesterday, 1 goal and then didn't do too much else. So probably wanted a bit more from Steve-O. Mm. Slevo Stevo needs to be god tier like Helmet Jerry. So we need that meme. Aiden Corr, this is the one we disagree on. I thought he was easily the weakest of the three. No impact in the marking contest. And anytime there's a one-on-one and he's there, I don't think he's quick enough to follow. He got outmarked on the lead plenty of times. Doesn't impact enough in the marking contest. And as the most experienced defender and part of the leadership group, I just don't think he did enough. I think Pink and Dawson were both better than him on the day, and he's probably not playing on he's definitely not playing on the best forward, if not the second best as well.
Well, this is what I don't understand with Aiden Corr. So we don't fully disagree. I just want to flag that. I think that Aiden Corr has been disappointing in the opening two rounds of the season in comparison to how he finished off last season.
It's like he's playing a completely different role. And I don't know exactly what it is. I haven't studied it enough. But like, it's weird to me that he can play as the second best defender and look amazing, but his amazing things he does is more like running off half back, like Callum Dawson looks to be doing sometimes. He did it again. He made a run through the middle yesterday. I'm not sure what Aiden Corr is exactly there to do, because the things it looks like they're asking him to do, which is clearly be a key defender and stick on someone on the lead and impact a marking contest, I think are all his weaknesses.
Well, his form begs to differ. I think when there is just he and one other key defender, it's when he thrives. I mean, this is the same thing before Griffin
Logue. But with our options, we're just not going to ever have that again. Like, Griffin Logue's got to come back. Combin's not even in this team. Arguably, at the start of the season, they were the two guys I want to be our key defensive partnership. Now Dawson's playing so well. Pink, Biggie, you know, is someone who's going to push to get in that team. You know, I think he's going to play every week. I don't think he's ever going to get dropped because he's in the leadership group. But,
yeah, but
I think he's the weakest.
But he can't. He's not the weakest, but the way that the team is structured at the moment doesn't favour him. Mm. Now, I'm not making excuses for him because I don't disagree. I think that if he keeps this up, he's going to have to make way. Yeah. I completely agree with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I can sit here and I can acknowledge that where he was at from in the second half of last season in comparison to the last two games he's played, he's been pretty disappointing. And I'm not gonna shy away from that just because I loved what he did at the end of last season. But Aiden Corr as the third man in a three man tall defense does not work. That's why he looked so, and I think that I don't know what it is with him, because I criticized him at the start of last year for being lazy. You know, alongside Griff and alongside Mackay, he just looked completely out of place. So then why is it that he can't take ownership as the third key defender like he can when he's the second?
Because you'd think it's probably an easier job that he takes, like the third best tall, and that will maybe allow him to be better than that player and use his skill by foot.
Like, is he really that one-dimensional? And is he really just...
Yeah, I don't... I think so.
Like,
but
Charlie Lazaro isn't... And I'm just, you know, he's the next one we'll talk about. But you can throw... And they're completely different players.
Well, let's talk about Lazaro as well then, so we can keep going.
Both of these guys are so good in their key position. In their main position, they are, you know, I mean, Aiden Corr had an excellent second half of the year. I mean, Charlie Lazaro last week playing, you know, purely in the midfield is the best game he's ever played, and he played excellent against the Suns at the end of last year too. But as soon as we demand something different from them, maybe they're just not versatile enough.
I kind of agree
and
with that.
And unfortunately, with this side,
they need
side,
to be with the options we've got.
We, because of how we've drafted and recruited in the past, we need guys who are versatile.
Correct. Yep. So, I think so too. And like Tom Powell showed, he can push forward and kick goals. Simkin, look at the versatility. He doesn't have to just be on the midfield. He can go forward and kick goals. McKercher is a midfielder. Schiesel was a forward. And look at what they've been able to do.
In terms of the two of them, how much I think Corr will stay in the side. Whether Lazaro gets another chance, I don't know. And being subbed off yesterday, I mean, potentially we now look to give Phillips a shot. And I think that a lot of fans would be screaming at this point to bring Phillips back into the side.
Or Greenwood.
Well, I mean, who knows what happens with CCJ and how Greenwood fits into that too and where he plays. But I think that Corr they need to persist with. But he needs to take a bit of responsibility.
He does. He needs to figure it out. As a leader, you have to figure it out.
You've got to figure out a way to have an impact, even if you don't think things are going your way.
Correct.
So I'd really like to see more from him.
We've talked about Lazaro then. CCJ, it's probably time.
Yeah, get rid of him.
I'm over it. Once again, first
He's
quarter.
He's been evicted from the Big Brother house.
You're the weakest link, goodbye. It took a really good contested mark in the first quarter. And once again, I think he was good in the first quarter and then just failed to impact the game at all. I do stand by sort of what I was trying to say, which apparently to some people didn't come across how I meant it. I don't think he was a negative when he's around the ball, but the negative thing he does is just never be there.
Well, he's never there.
He's never there, exactly. So
that's the thing.
I think it's time to try a Sellers or a Greenwood or something like that up there, because yeah, his lack of impact, I don't think he's doing anything wrong when he's around the play, but the fact he's not around the play is the thing he's doing wrong.
This side needs Hugh Greenwood so badly, it's not.
Yeah, and I genuinely agree with you. Not even from a Hugh Greenwood stand point of view. It's like I said, did I say this to people yesterday? It was another podcast. Hugh Greenwood, I said this in the last podcast. Hugh Greenwood in that midfield would have brought so much toughness. I'm not fully convinced of Hugh in the forward line at AFL level. I'm not going to be upset if we see it, but I think still he's got so much to give for our team and in that midfield. Like, you've got a 32-year-old Hugh Greenwood who's tough in and under. He's the closest thing to Cunnington we have. And getting it out to Wardlaw, to Sheasel, to Powell, to LDU is going to be a much better combination.
I think we're crying out for a little bit of leadership as well. I mean, unfortunately, Corr's not really bringing that. Larky was, you know, just
he can only do so much though.
Yesterday, Simkin and McDonald are both a little bit fragile, and they'll be okay, you know, as they get a bit more game time. But, I mean, I don't need to say any more on Hugh Greenwood than I already have in the past. Everyone's sick of me talking about it. But I will say, last night on the way home, I took the train yesterday, which is so unlike me. But coming home, I met this guy, Wally, on the train. He was cooked. But he was an All supporter, and he agreed with me that Hugh Greenwood was also his favourite player.
Oh, wow. There's another one.
There's another one. And he said to me, I really think that Hugh Greenwood should be playing, and why isn't he playing? And I said, mate, that's a question I ask every week on the podcast. So, Wally, if you are listening, you know, I'm campaigning for this every single week, and hopefully it's a good Friday for me with Hugh Greenwood back in the side.
The last one we'll talk about is Larky. Probably not his best game. Obviously not dropping Nick Larky ever. And he's a star and I love Nick Larky. But yeah, once again, that leadership thing, we really wanted him to step up yesterday. And I'm not saying it's his fault. Are we making some excuses for Larky because we love him so much potentially? But yeah, not quite good enough from
but
Nick.
But also, I think on the flip side, you can't expect him to carry the forward line week in, week out. We've been
so fortunate
last season that he did that for us. But God forbid he goes down with an injury. God forbid, you know, he has a quiet game and he was so well covered, like we said, by Pierce yesterday. We were lucky yesterday. We had a very even spread of contributors. We had multiple goal scorers.
Yeah.
But we just do really need, you know.
Yeah.
We need a solid right-hand man for him. So I think Greenwood should be next in line to get a shot, but whether we bypass him and bring in Sellers, I don't know what the answer is, but I hope that change is made this week.
Fair enough. Okay, lastly, to finish, Sean Attlee Club Champ votes. We're giving 3 to Tom Powell, 2 to LDU, and 1 to George Wardlaw.
You guys will be pleased to know this was unanimous this week.
It was unanimous. Shout out to Fisher and Paul Curtis. I've put there, I think they were maybe next in line for a couple of votes.
And probably Bailey Scott. You could chuck Scott in there as well.
You can throw a few, but they're the ones we're going with, so we'll update that. I was going to talk a little bit of VFL, like, incredibly quickly. I'll just try and find the website here. Sellers kicked 6.
He
which
did.
Was fantastic.
Excellent.
Fantastic
him.
Games from, like, a Bergman. Let me get the disposals up here. How do we find this? Liam Shields had 33 disposals. Will Phillips, 30 touches. Bergman, 29. Really composed at the back. Sellers kicking 6, like we said. Comben, I think I watched a little bit of it. Did get a little bit outmarked sometimes, but reports are he's still solid down there. So we did beat the Northern Bullards 81-42. So
it was a comprehensive win in the end by our VFL side, which was lovely.
So just quickly to touch, because we do have to just finish up, but we're trying to keep the podcast a little bit shorter.
We do love to chat though, as you guys know.
Absolutely. So we'll wrap it up here. We'll talk more in the preview podcast, but thank you for coming on again, Marnie, and dissecting all of that performance.
Thank you for having me. If you guys don't follow us already on socials, Further North Pod on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube. Hi, YouTube.
Hi, YouTube.
And we'll be
back. I have a new haircut. Should I point that out? I'm trialing a new haircut. It's all got to grow, so don't
let
roast me in the comments too much.
Let us know of Josh's haircut.
Please
in the
don't.
Comments below.
It's a work in progress. Give me 3 months.
We have a very, very special preview episode coming up on Friday, or ahead of the Good Friday clash, I should say, against Carlton. But yeah, we'll see you guys then, I guess.
I think that's about it. Yeah, preview podcast, Carlton Besties are on, so that's very, very exciting.
Very exciting.
So, yeah, thank you for listening us to us again. Hopefully we're all remaining positive. I feel like this is a fairly positive podcast. Fair criticism.
That's nice and different from you.
Yeah, well, a new you, new me, Marnie. My form matches Toby Pink's form. So if Toby Pink plays well, I podcast well. We're the same. Every redhead is the same. We all know we're connected.
No pressure, Toby, but keep up the good work, please.
Absolutely. Okay, that's enough Toby Pink chat. Thank you, guys. We will see you next week. Have fun, and footy is cool.
Bye, guys.